House Looks crew, have you ever wondered what it takes to break in, to work on large historical fantasy or battle scenes, and to witness the true scope of film in all of its massive ambition? Well, that's crowdwork. And hats off to the people that run it, including the crowd supervisors for hair and makeup. My name is Vanessa Blanchard-Lee, and today I will be your guest host for this bonus episode of The Last Looks podcast. I work in TV, film, theatre and commercial, and I'm also a member of IATSE Local 706, the TV Academy and BAFTA. Today our topic will be hair and makeup for crowd scenes in film and television. We are so fortunate to have our special guest, Julia Vernon, back with us. Julia is one of the most established crowd supervisors worldwide. She has helped bring some major award-winning movies to life. You would have seen her work on Napoleon, Nutcracker and the Four Realms, Cruella, Downton Abbey, Les Miserables, but to name but a few. And remember, if you love to listen in as much as I do, please feel free to support the podcast by giving us a review, social media shout out, or even buy us a coffee. You'll find all the links you need in the show notes. My name is Vanessa, and this is The Last Looks podcast, a show where we catch up with hairstylists and makeup artists working in the film and TV industries around the world. And today, we'll be chatting with crowd supervisor, Julia Vernon.
And now, our feature presentation.
Pitch it up.
Last Looks. Rolling.
And action.
Welcome to The Last Looks podcast, Julia.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I wanted to speak with you about this topic because you work with several designers and under several directors and over various genres. And also given that you've been nominated for several awards under this, you know, in this realm of crowd supervisor, including the Oscar nomination for Cruella. So who better to talk about this topic than you? Also, we feel that it's been a very important development in the industry. It's being recognized, you know, in awards, and it's a role that everybody does. And it's usually how they enter into the film and TV industry. So it is ever relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think maybe we can say for folks at home, so for the sake of simplicity and the global listener on this podcast today, we will be using the terms crowd scenes, crowd hair and makeup artist, crowd actor, and crowd supervisor. You will hear different terms around the world, and we're just going to use the word crowd today. So, Julia, for those people who are less familiar with working in the crowd room, could you briefly describe your role as hair and makeup crowd supervisor and how long you've been in this specialty?
Well, the crowd supervisor role, I think years ago, didn't really exist. And I mean, I came into it about 20 years ago. I've just looked at IMDb, actually, to remind myself. And it was about 20 years ago, which is kind of quite gobsmacking, really.
Wow.
I was doing theatre before that. And it's a role that's basically the designer is taken on the job. They get the gig sort of thing. And then they put together the team that they want to do the film, and it's normally period films that I do. So generally they have a crowd supervisor and I'm basically booked by the designer, and then they start prepping and they bring me on board to prep, and obviously depending on the size of the project, how much prep you get and etc. So yeah, and then I'm brought on board and they put their main team together with for the actors, and then I'm on board and then I bring my team on with me. Yeah, that's how it sort of works.
And can I just ask, are you on it for the entire film or are you only coming in for crowd scenes?
No, I'm normally on for the whole job, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Fantastic.
Yeah. And it's generally sort of 6 weeks before is the sort of prep time I get. And it has been a bit less than that. It hasn't generally been much more than that. Okay. So
great.
So yes. So the designer comes on board and then very often I come in shortly after they've been in. They've started, so they've done their research and they've been prepping for maybe a couple of weeks and they've gone through the script and all that kind of thing, and then they've sort of realised they know what they need from me, and then I come in. So very often I start before any of the other main team guys start, and obviously it depends when the fitting starts as well. If it's a big crowd scenes and you're starting with big crowd scenes, then I start quite early on in that process to fit everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, it's enormous. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty now.
Mm-hmm.
I think a question that a lot of people would want to ask, what are some of the factors that make a really good impression as a crowd hairstylist and makeup artist?
A good impression is being on time. Not being late, that's a good start. It's being enthusiastic, being keen, being willing to do what's required, and ideally not too slow. Because generally you've got quite a lot of people to get through. So, yeah. And I'm being in the UK, we do both hair and makeup. I mean, there are people who just do hair and just do makeup, but generally most people do both. And depending on the type of job it is, it depends who I bring in, really. If it's a strong, most period jobs, it's much stronger in the hair side than the makeup. So I would have people who just do hair as well as people who do both, rather than a lot of just makeup people. So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We're going to touch on that a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. So perfect lead to the next question. A few more details about what your criteria is. How do you go about vetting and selecting your crowd artists?
Well, it's kind of, yeah, I mean, because I've been doing it for so long now, I know a lot of people. So I use the same people a lot of the time. The people who are new to me are trainees and juniors. And I know that they don't always have trainees and juniors in other countries, I don't believe. But in the UK, we do. We have trainees that start at the bottom and work their way up, and juniors are the next level, and then they generally have a space, and they're obviously experienced, and they've got a kit, and they have a place in the crowd room where they do hair and makeup, whereas the trainees don't generally have that. They're just helping us, supporting us. So yeah, I mean, it's recommendation as well. Obviously I know other crowd supervisors, and I ask them if they have recommendations. I mean, some jobs I've needed lots of people. I mean, I've needed 95. I think the biggest crowd I did was Dumbo, and that was about 100 hair and makeup artists I needed for quite a big chunk of time. And I definitely needed help sourcing some people for that one. So yeah. So it's just talking to other people, really, other supervisors, people I know, people who've been doing it a long time. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. In terms of the criteria, do you ask them to send you in pictures, or again, you're very much relying upon that recommendation?
No. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, people do send CVs, but there's generally, you know, it's not generally gone on a CV. I don't go on CVs particularly. I go on recommendations more than anything else. Yeah. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And thanks for letting us know about those trainees as well, because I think that is, you know, particular to the UK, you know, and it's a great training ground as well.
Well, there's a lot of students. There's lots of students. There's lots of makeup schools here.
Yeah.
And a lot of students come out of those schools. And I've got friends who teach in those schools. And so I talk to them, and they sometimes just ring me and go, I've got an absolutely fantastic student here. They'll make a great trainee. They've got loads of potential. So, and that's how I get trainees as well. So yeah, it's nice for them. I say they don't get massively, unless they're doing TV where it's a lower budget, and they have a more of a hands-on job doing hair and makeup. As in the film world, it's generally, they're just helping support the artists and the juniors. Yeah.
That's fantastic. So I think we might go into some examples later, but
yeah,
I'm going to ask a different kind of question, which is, what would cause you to question hiring a person, or perhaps not hiring them again?
Cause me to question. Well, if they're late, if you see them particularly not supporting the artist, I mean, they need to be on their feet doing stuff all the time, helping, especially if we can have a very long call in the morning, getting everyone ready, and we're working very hard. And if I see the trainees not doing the same, that's not a good impression. So that probably would be one of them. People who aren't good timekeepers, that's probably the most reasons I wouldn't get them back. Mm-hmm. And attitude, you've got to have a really good attitude. You know, you want to help, you want to be keen. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And the slowness that you mentioned as well. So they need to keep an eye on the time and work quickly.
Yeah.
And just thinking, with your theatre background, you know how to work quickly.
Yeah.
And that would be an expectation of those artists, crowd artists as well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, sometimes, you know, sometimes people just do beautiful work, but they're not very fast. Yeah. And you have to weigh up the fact that they do beautiful work. You know, maybe you've got some featured characters that you give them to and you think, well, I want to give them the time, you know, to create what they're really good at. Even though I say a lot of people, you need to get the, you know, you need to get the numbers through. But sometimes, you know, I would give people more time if they are incredibly brilliant. And actually, I have a lot of very incredibly brilliant people that work with me and work on you know, on they're crowd artists.
Yes.
And they are incredibly talented and could easily go onto a main team and look after actors, but they've made a choice to not do that for whatever reason it is for them. And they just want a working crowd, but they are incredibly talented and do beautiful work.
Yes. Yeah. There's quite a few I can think of, actually. That's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've mentioned this idea of separated roles before in terms of, you know, the UK tends to have combined roles, which means the artist does both hair and makeup or wigs, hair and makeup.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what the challenges and advantages of either method, where you've got a combo artist, so to speak, that does both, or where you have somebody in special effects, somebody in wigs, somebody in hair, somebody in makeup. Can you talk us through some of those examples?
Well, when we did Maleficent, we had a whole separate prosthetics team. We were all in the same space. They had one end of the marquee and we who did hair and makeup were at the other end. So we just had so in that, that's quite, it's like sort of careful choreography. It's a sort of a dance between us and them. You know, it's a very early start in the morning. We would have to be there, or the hair people would have to be there to prep the hair to go under the prosthetic pieces. And they have these special horn attachments. So they would have to do that. And then they go to prosthetics and they're in prosthetics for 3 hours or whatever it was. And then they come back to us. And so it really depends on the job as to the skill set you want and whether you really want people who just do one thing. Or, I mean, a lot of people who do both, they really enjoy doing both. They enjoy doing the finished, complete look.
Yes.
They don't like to hand it over to other people. You know, they want to do the whole complete look. And I sort of understand that. So I say it just depends really on, sometimes people think it's faster if they do both. Sometimes people think it's faster if they, you know, they jump between a hair. I mean, I think if you're moving, the more you have to move people around, the more time you're losing when you've got a busy call. So I would rather have somebody just do both if they can. And I find it's probably faster that way too.
To do it in that way. Yes, I can imagine that people get distracted in between as they move between the people. Yes.
Yeah.
With their friend.
Yeah.
Et cetera. Yeah. So I can see that. I have seen, you know, a shift towards separating the departments, and that's been sort of quite, you know, interesting. Cruella, tell me, I know that we've touched on this before, but I think people are still fascinated by Cruella. Were they combo artists? I'm thinking about the ballroom scene where you've got 100 black and white wigs plus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, it was both. Sometimes I had people who just did hair, just did wigs and hair. Most people who do hair do wigs as well. There's not, I don't think I know anybody who doesn't do both of those things. If you're a hairdresser, you do wigs as well. I think some people are better than others. I mean, in theatre, that's what you do. You do mostly wigs. So you learn to be very fast with wigs. There's also different techniques of how you put them on in theatre. For TV and film, sometimes you have to be a bit more precise and maybe make it look more natural. But for that scene, obviously they were all wigs, and obviously they're all prepped beforehand. We spent weeks dressing wigs, weeks and weeks and weeks. And those wigs, the black and white wigs, were delayed in coming to us because they actually were the wrong way around. Black and white was the wrong way around. So they had to be remade in the correct colorway. So we basically got everything else ready for the scenes that were going to be shot after that. But we just got all the other, you know, the 18th century ball. We got everything else ready because we knew we were just going to have to go absolutely mad on the black and white wigs as soon as they arrived. So we hadn't got the time. So they're put on by, I say, you know, both people. You know, if you do hair and makeup, you put the wigs on as well. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds fantastic. And we can dig a little deeper into some more examples. I've got a juicy question for you at the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we have, we touched on the trainees a little bit earlier. And again, in the USA, we don't really have that role. So is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about that role in terms of, you know, how do you decide that a trainee is going to become a junior and then a junior to an artist. And this is the sort of hierarchy that's within the UK. In the UK, you're in the union or you're not.
It's hard. It isn't easy because there's no, we have talked about it over the years. How do you know someone's ready to be a junior and then ready to be an artist? It's not like they have to pass any exams. You know, we've talked about that. Do we set up some sort of form of, you know, between the artists, between the crowd supervisors and the designers, you know, do you, you know, set something up that they have to complete certain tasks to be able to become a junior or then become an artist? It has been discussed, but it's just never been done. And it's quite hard to do that, I think, because we're not a sort of a body. We're just individual people. So, you know, we're not a union, we're not a, you know, anything like that. So we just basically discuss it. And if I ask somebody who I know was a trainee to come onto a job with me and I say, are you still a trainee or have you been working as a junior? And they'll say, well, as a junior, I was on this project. And very often I think, well, it depends what I'm wanting them to do. If they've just been a junior on contemporary programs, TV or film, but I'm wanting them to come onto a period thing where I'm going to expect them to do wigs and period hairdressing, then I think that they maybe not a junior for me. They're still a trainee. Do you know what I mean? So I need to see what their skills are. And some people are very humble and they'll go, no, I'd rather come on as a trainee. I don't know. Can't put wigs on, or I'm not very confident, or I'm very slow, or this, that, and the other. So, and other people are very confident and go, yeah, absolutely, I'm a junior, I can do that. And then you find out that they can't. So it's a little bit like that. It's a bit like that, really. Yeah. And some people don't want to ever become an artist. So then the next step to an artist, because there's much more pressure on them to be an artist. If they're an artist, if they're getting paid more money, they know there's more expectation of them. Yeah. So, I mean, I've had somebody working with me for years. She started off as a trainee with me and she's now an artist with me. But she, for years, no, I'd rather be a junior. I'd rather still stay as a junior. I don't want to be an artist. So you've got to be, you know, you've got to step up at some point, you know. And she was really holding herself back because she didn't want to be, you know. There's more pressure on you.
Julia, could you tell us the difference between a junior and an artist? I think it's quite clear between a trainee and junior, meaning, you know, you're supporting the juniors. You're not necessarily fitting a wig, or you might only be doing some dirty down or something like that as a trainee.
Yeah.
Tell us the difference between the artist and the junior.
Well, the artist obviously has just got a lot more experience. They're faster. They know their periods better. You know, juniors are still probably learning. They still don't know. They probably haven't done a lot of different periods. They're just slower generally and still need more guidance for certain periods. They might never have done 50s, or they might never have done, you know, 18th century or that sort of thing. So they're still learning. You know, they are there doing it, but they're slower and they still need some guidance, and that's fine. And that's because they're learning. You're happy to do that and expect them to need some help. But the artist, you don't expect them to need help. That's the main thing I would
yes,
say. Yes,
definitely. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's great. Is there funding for trainees?
There's not funding. There's a skill set. There are sort of bodies where you can sort of be on a list. One of them is skill set. And they're also free to production. So they very often get given to TV stuff because TV hasn't got the bigger budget, so they get a free trainee. So that's the sort of funding, if you know what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so skill set pays them to work, but the TV company can just...
Yes.
The show gets them for free. Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I was looking at screen skills and there are some BAFTA, you know, projects.
Yes, yeah. I think there's more and more coming up, and they keep changing their names, which gets confusing. So you think you know something, but then they change the name. That's changed. There was another one that was called, I think it's now called Skill Set, and it was called something else. But yeah, that's what happens basically. Yeah, you can get onto those programs, and then you can get, I mean, that's the best way of doing it really as a trainee, because of course people don't really know you. It's that first step onto a job. You know, once you get onto a job, if you're in a big crowd room, you meet all those people, you know, and you've got so much more chances of getting taken on to other jobs if you make a good impression, obviously, and then if you just trying to send your CV out to endless people and that people aren't actually seeing you, you know, it's much more difficult that way.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a mentor to a couple of trainees. And then I've taken one onto a job I did as well. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it sounds like it sort of replaced the BBC training to a certain extent, you know, having people, you know, come through in that method.
Yeah. It is a shame, the BBC thing. I only just started coming into the industry when they just stopped that, actually. Because I would have loved to have done that if I'd known about it earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. So thinking about how the juniors, the artists, the trainees in Crowd, how can they best support upwards to their supervisor, to you?
How can they best support? By doing what they're asked, I suppose, yeah. to their best of their ability, you know, being on set, you know, doing the call in the morning and then being on set, being vigilant, being, I normally put teams on set. So people generally aren't on set all day long. I have teams that go in and out during the day, and there's normally a team leader on the set shift. And they will then guide the team to where they need to be, what they need to do, what to look out for, anything like that. Yeah, yeah. And we have radios now. We never, ever used to have radios. We were the last department, but virtually the only department on set that didn't have radios. And now we have radios because we never got the information that was needed. So you always felt that you always trying to eavesdrop on what was going on. What's going on? What's going on? You know, and now we can hear and we can get ahead of ourselves and organised and not be the last ones to hear what was happening next.
That's right.
So generally the team leaders have the radio and then they could go, right, guys, they're going to do this next. So let's go over to there or whenever it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're not slowing up production. It's essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds great. And it's great that you would, you know, rotate those teams, particularly on a really hot day, really cold day, you know.
Exactly. Really
that in the mud day. That's always fun as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You can tell who's gone over because of what they've got on the back of the coat.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Okay, so this is my juiciest question. So go as far as you'd like, obviously, as you know, as you're allowed to or as you're comfortable to. But I would love you to tell us about a very challenging or an unusual Crowd day for both you and your crew. I'd love for you to tell us about some of those insights that you had in the moment or afterwards, whether it's a high or a low. Go for it.
Right. Well, okay. As a low, we'll start with a low because that's fresh in my mind.
Oh,
so the low, funnily enough, it was Napoleon, which is what I'm nominated for a BAFTA for and didn't make it onto the Oscars list. But that job almost broke me. It was... From day one on that job, the day I started that job, I knew what a challenge it was going to be. And that's putting it nicely. You know, even though I've done all these films, and I've done a Ridley Scott film before, I did Exodus, and that was big. But this was just, it was like guerrilla filmmaking on a grand scale. We had 6 weeks prep, which was nowhere near enough for that job at all. Because we were starting fittings 3 weeks after I started prep, and we were doing 100 fittings a day, and the fittings were both military and civilian, and the military were being double fitted, sometimes triple fitted, and also it was over a period of time that changed from, you know, wig wearing, hard front wigs and long hair to short hair, and we had to source all the stock and get it ready and prepared for the fittings. We had a tiny space to do it in as well. It was just, we were sort of end of COVID, and it was just not a suitable space really, but that was what we had, and it was too late to change it, go anywhere else. So we had to make that work. And also it was the historical element of the military side. We shouldn't know. I mean, I could have spent 6 months just studying the military and trying to learn what they had on their heads, you know, the wigs, the different types of wigs. You know, the Grenadiers, the Imperial Guards, the King's Guards. Yeah, it was massive. There was this note, you were just literally playing catch up, running, you were just chasing your tail from day one of that job. And it never stopped. We had weather challenges. We were in a massive marquee and the wind was so high, we had to get out of the marquee with all, and we were on the move all the time as well. The logistics was massive on that. We were moving all the time within every 2 or 3 days. moving somewhere else. So everything had to be packed up and, you know, moved to the next place. And we had weather issues. We had to move out of a marquee because of the wind. We were like back in. Then they wanted us to get back in and they still wanted to shoot that day. And we had to kind of get back into the marquee and do the call of 600 people at the set. It was one of those jobs that I'd put an amazing team together, a big team, and I knew I needed them. And oh boy, yeah, that was huge. That was huge, yeah. Yeah. We all finished that with a little bit of PTSD, I have to say.
Oh, it actually sounds like you were in the military marching with them from pillar to post.
Yeah. I mean, the whole production was like that. I mean, costume were incredibly stressed. Everybody, every department you spoke to was just like, what, you know, and it was just, I've never done anything like that before. And, you know, I say we were all experienced, but it was, you know, there's nothing you could have done to have made it any better. You could have more people, you know, there was just nothing other than time, because he shoots so fast. You know, you have 10 cameras at the battles, which is fine. You know, you have people on set, you have people on each teams on each camera. But he would change. It changes. It's the speed he shoots so fast, and then he'd throw other things in, and you had to have stock on set to change things on set, and you had to have things back in the marquee because they were constantly coming back to the marquee to change into other things. So that was massive. That job. And also for me personally, I was also doing the Cruella stuff for the BAFTAs and the Oscars, so I had to keep leaving and going to the States and then, you know, dealing with all that and leaving my team in charge and then feeling incredibly guilty that I was leaving them. Oh God. Yeah. That was a low. It really was.
Well, almost like the extra prep time wouldn't have mattered because the sheer impact and the changes on the day.
It was the logistics, the lack of space, straight into fittings before you'd even got your wigs, you know, sourced, that sort of thing. It was just, I could have started 6 months before that and that might have helped a bit, but, you know, there was many other things, but every department felt the same. It's so funny. Every department felt the same. And everyone's like, oh, it's great. We love working like this. Really? Yeah. It's like, you can't do your best work. And it just feels like it's not being respected, the work that you're doing, because it doesn't, it's just like, do it now, you know, sort of thing. It's like, oh, anyway. That's me being very honest with you. I'm being very honest, yeah.
So everyone's got like a trauma bond now. Oh, we really appreciate that. So let's move on from the PTSD and finish with the highs. Yeah.
Oh,
tell us a high.
Highs. I mean, I've done some, you know, amazing films. I mean, films that we've absolutely loved. I mean, Les Mis was, again, a hard film to do. It was relatively low budget. But we were just told, just do it. Just go for it, you know. And that was fabulous, you know, doing the makeup on that and the hair on that was great fun, you know, really going through grunge and warts and, you know, everything like that. Yeah, that was fantastic. But I've also loved, you know, I've loved working with some fantastic designers, you know, Jenny Shercor, you know, up there, one of the best, you know. I started working with her and having known nothing really, came straight from the theatre and I don't even know why she asked me, but she asked me to do a crowd supervisor, a small thing she was doing called Starter for 10 and an 80s thing, which I felt quite comfortable doing because I was around, I was that age in the 80s. so that was fantastic, you know, doing that. But, you know, beautiful period, you know, the golden age, Elizabethan was lovely. And again, Jenny likes you to push it. She doesn't ever want to just do something that's been seen before or the norm. It's just like, just push it a bit more, you know. So that was wonderful working with her and young Victoria, again, beautiful. So yeah, it's those highs of when you've worked really hard and you've had a big call and you just see it all there on set, you know, that's really fabulous. Yeah, 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 yeah.
That's really great. Would you say a high is also when you've had a hand in tweaking the design? I know obviously that's the designer's call.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And most of the designers I work with, they let me do it. You know, we obviously talk about it and certain things. And actually Nutcracker for Jenny was a really, out there. Oh, my God.
Thinking of that one.
yeah, absolutely. She came up with these ideas and then she's like, right, kind of work it out. And it's like, oh, my God. So you're working together to see how you can make this work in the time you've got. You know, I remember doing the icicle. So the ice world for Nutcracker, you know, for cast, you could have things specially made and all that kind of thing, you know. But
yes,
I was like, okay, right, for the crowd, we can't have things specially made for all of them. So we're going to have to figure out how to do this. So I remember getting some of the trainees, this is what some of the trainees had to do. They had to do a time and motion study in how many icicles they could make in an hour. And with cling film and what did we use? Oh, glue. It was glue guns. So I think I YouTubed it. And it's, you have to put it, dunk it into water so it doesn't go opaque. So it stays, you know, clear. Like, so anyway, so we have them making all sorts of different shapes, sizes of icicles and, you know, it's things like that. So it's, that was incredibly creative, that job. Really creative.
Yes, I really appreciated the half round iris on the eyelid.
Yes.
And under the eye.
Yes.
I've actually used that.
Yeah.
Myself.
Have you?
And
I mean, it's hard to do, isn't it? You really got to get it right. Oof, in the right place.
The right shape, the right place. They've got to stare at you for, you know, 10 hours.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And also the painterly vines and flowers around, and I remember reading about that and I wondered whether, you know, you know that was a sort of co-design job where you know decided.
Well, yeah. I mean, I say Jenny says this is what I'd like. I'd like this, that, and the other. And we just go and we just practice. You know, we do lots of tests. You know, we get people in, we get models in, and we do lots of tests and try things out and try this and try that and constantly show her pictures and what do you think? She comes in, yeah, like that, maybe not like that, maybe a bit more like this. So yeah, I mean, that was, yeah. I mean, she's very collaborative and she's got these fantastic ideas, but she does also let you, you know, let you run a bit with it. And so, yeah, that was a really incredible and creative job. Yeah. Working out how to do things that we'd never done before, not just straight period hairdressing and all that kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Making things, how to make things, you know, with not a massive budget and making it work with, you know, for time. I mean, I think I normally, when I work out a crowd, I normally, depending on what the job is particularly, but it's normally in a call, you know, you can maybe do 4 or 5 people each. But that job, we had 2 people and 1 artist, which I've never done before because there was so much to do on each person.
Yes, it was very intricate.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I don't think you see it as much as we'd like. You don't really see some of the detail, if I remember rightly. I'm trying to remember the film. We worked so closely with costume. That was a job we worked incredibly close with. Jenny Bevan, costume designer, absolutely gorgeous. Claire Sprague, the supervisor. We made things for the performance on the ballerinas in the ice world. You know, she'd made some headdresses that were really pretty. But I said, well, we've actually made some out of icicles. What do you think? And she's like, oh, yeah, go for it. You know, use those. Don't use mine. Use yours. You know, that sort of thing. And there's not every costume designer would say that. put it that way.
Yeah.
She was lovely. So, yeah, it's that they're also jobs where that you have very great memories and fond memories when you can work really well with the costume department.
Yeah, another collaboration. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
She's creative and you've got appliques here and there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do without them. Yeah.
No. And if you don't collaborate well, which sometimes is the way, it's nowhere near as enjoyable a job. And I don't think you get such a good finish either as of the look, you know. Jenny was on Cruella, you know, and just fabulous to work with and easy to talk to, and yeah, it's all teamwork, isn't it?
It is. And if you know, and if you've listened to the other podcast episodes, communication and collaboration are the key elements of success and job satisfaction and a creative life.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. It just, the job satisfaction is so much higher when you have those, when you feed off each other like that. And you bounce ideas off each other and it all comes together. It's so satisfying as to when you're the opposite, you know, if you're
just bumping heads all the time and they don't want to do this. And it's just, yeah, which does happen, you know, it does happen. Or you can't communicate with people. And it's just so, so wonderful when it works together and you're really happy as a team. Yeah, yeah. We do such long hours that if you're not enjoying it, it's just hard work. And it's so much better for everybody. You're so much better for everybody, mentally, physically. If you all just work together well and the time flies by and
it keeps you going.
Yeah.
It's those creative juices, you know, keeps you going.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, I think we might have a little bit more time for one more question on exploration.
Uh-huh.
And I would love to ask you, is there any advice that you would want to give to somebody who is starting out and wants to work crowd, you know, they're new coming in and any sort of like three words of wisdom you would like to give them?
Well, it depends where they are coming from. I always tell people to go and do some work in theatre if they can. If they haven't already, go and work in theatre because your hair skills will get up to speed. You have to work fast. You do it over and over and over again.
Yes.
Both the putting on the wigs and the dressing them out, setting them and dressing them, setting them and dressing them, putting them on, you know, taking them off. It's such great training. I didn't train. I went to theatre and that's where I trained. I was given a fabulous job straight away from nothing by somebody who just, I was very lucky and he gave me a chance. And I don't know whether that would happen now, but I literally learned on the job. And it's a fantastic way of getting in and getting experience. And I would probably always look at somebody first. If I have a CV and it says they've worked in theatre, I would definitely put them at the top of the list. Other than that, just keep going, you know, email people, you know, send your CVs. But it is mostly who you know. It's trying to get in somehow with who you know. That's the key, really. It's very hard when there's so many people out there. But yeah, write a good letter. Write a good letter. So you make a good cup of tea, that sort of thing, you know.
Okay, so you don't mind a little bit of humour in there.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you'll be needing those teas after, you know, a cup or after the long days.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. So communication, collaboration and tea is what gets
you
through.
Yeah. Tea and coffee, definitely. Yeah. A good coffee too. I'm a coffee drinker in the afternoon and a tea drinker in the morning. So yeah. Good at the craft run. If you're lucky enough to be on a job that has craft, you know, good at offering craft all the time. So I guess craft for you, that's a good one too.
I was going to say, do you take milk and sugar? That's how I was going to end it. Okay.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is hard to get in. It is hard to get in, especially say where there's so many schools now, you know. And at the moment, it's so hard for everybody because there's just no work in the UK at the moment. And after COVID, people just getting back on their feet, and there's like those poor youngsters that's come straight out of college into nothing.
Yeah, and it's been slow to pick up after the strikes. I think kind of everywhere around the world, by the sound of it.
Yeah, it's very strange. I think people thought after Christmas it would all just kick off, but it hasn't. So we'll see. Yeah.
See.
But yeah, so I'm having a lot of youngsters email me, can I go on your list? Can I go on your list? It's like, I haven't got a list at the moment. I'm so sorry. Yeah, but hopefully soon.
Yeah. Hopefully the summer it'll kick off. Great. So I really appreciate all of your time and we're going to wrap it up there. So Julia, this has been fun and fabulous and also very educational. I want to thank you for your years of expertise and love for this industry and for today's time.
No problem.
For the bonus episode of the Last Looks podcast. Thank you so much.
Good. I hope somebody gets something out of it. Yeah.